Hey, everybody, welcome to another episode. I am Michael Petro, and joining me on the show this week, you have got returning guest Cam Patterson, director, screenwriter, actor, drummer extraordinaire, bringing his friend Dale Penner, who is a sound mixer by trade, has been working in the industry for like 30 years. And between the two of them, we talk about Cam's new film, his new short called Antibody, which is super fucking good. We're going to talk about that today. And just going over the making of it. What these fuckers are watching, my favorite to-date weekly watch list with Dale Penner is easily the best one we've ever done, so thank you for that, Dale. It's a bonus interview. It's part of our ongoing interview series with Manitobans Making Movies. That was our cheesy, affectionate working title when we first started this. And then it's just spiraled into interviewing film professionals in every aspect that there can be. Actors, directors, producers, stunts, cinematography, score, props. We've done it all. So if this is your first time listening, go back and check our back catalog. And there's a bunch of interviews there with people from all over Canada and the US too. And without the interviews wouldn't have expanded unless people in Manitoba had said yes to us and made me feel comfortable talking to them. So if you are a film professional listening to this, in any aspect, thank you for coming on the show. Thank you for listening to the show. We really appreciate it. Makes us nerds over here feel good that you pros give a fuck about what we're doing. And second to that, this film was premiered at the ACTRA MIP, which I'm going to screw up what MIP means, but I know it means that it was a production done by an ACTRA member in Manitoba. And me and Jimmy got to go see all these films, and they were fucking fantastic. So if you're an ACTRA member and you're listening to this and you have a story and you want to come on and talk about what you're watching and what you do in film, we'd love to have you. We were told to be quiet and sit in the back and shut the fuck up. No, we weren't. Nobody told us that. But it was great. So it was good to see a lot of you there. We know Alan, and nice to meet you, Paul. Paul Little, and everybody else who we didn't get a chance to say hello to. But yeah, we saw you there. So we're big fans of you. Come and let us know that you want to talk to us, and we will definitely talk to you. That being said, I'm going to shut the fuck up, move on, and let you listen to Cam and Dale Penner about Antibody and some really great stories on the road and some really great opinions on giving movies a second watch. So yeah, so that's who's on the show. That's what's on the show. I have nothing else for you, ladies and gentlemen, so I will cue the reel, and you enjoy the show.
Let's tidy up this tangle of film by putting it on a reel. Here is a motion picture film, 1,000 feet, 16,000 separate photographs.
Welcome, everybody, to the official space section of the Charter.
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
Sir, you're out of order.
Out of order? I show you out of order!
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another Real Debaters production. Welcome back to the show. Welcome to the place that asks that one fun question you tune in for each week. What happens when real life meets real life? If you haven't figured that out yet, it's 100 and some odd episodes. That's on you, not on us. So without further ado, I am very excited. We've got a returning guest, Cam Patterson. Maybe you listened to that episode. Maybe you didn't. He was on before. We talked about his book. We talked about screenwriting. We talked about pitching. We talked about drumming. I didn't know how much you knew about drumming, and that sent me down a YouTube rabbit hole of drumming after. So,
oh yeah.
So thank you for that. And he brought along a friend, Dale Penner. Say hello, Dale.
Hello.
And the two of these guys just finished a short. It's called Antibody, and it is premiering this week at the ACTRA MIP. Right, man. What's that stand for again?
It stands for Member Initiated Production.
Ah, so if you're in the ACTRA.
Yeah. So Darcy Fair, who, you know, couldn't be with us today, but Doris is the actor. He's an ACTRA member, so he sort of, we came up with the idea because we're all bored. And he said, "Hey, I can get this a MIP." Okay, fine.
That's
and
awesome.
There you go. Yeah.
So we're gonna talk about that and how it all came to be, and when you can see it eventually, because it's a beautifully shot short film, and I love fucking short film now. Like I never knew I had it in me, because I was always like, I'm not artsy enough, right? That's what it was. Like, I figured a short film meant you really had to look and first of all, love it, because you can get a lot in a very short period of time. It really tests an actor's physical presence, because they're not saying as much, right? They're conveying more with the not saying than they, like, body language and nuance and all that stuff. And also because of time. Like, if you really want to just, you know, get something in that will get on you and make you think. A short film is going to do it way more than Captain America's tight fucking ass on screen, right? Like, there's more to say in less time, which is so weird.
Yeah.
So we'll get into that in a sec. But we're gonna do some what you watched with these guys, because that's the title we call this segment of the show.
Right.
We have yet to figure out a really cool name. So Dale, what have you been watching?
Well, on Sunday I watched a YouTube video about how to clean the glass on my oven. You're going to be seriously disappointed in what I've been watching on TV.
No, man, it's not for me. It's
so
for everybody
I watched
listening.
That.
Did it prove? Did it?
No, I couldn't get it right. I took the door off, and I couldn't figure it out. So I just put the door back on. Seriously, I watched a curling game because I have relatives that curl.
Oh, what tournament's going on?
It was the Pinty's curling.
Okay, like Pinty's chicken wings.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right.
And. Some hockey, and then last night my wife and I decided we were going to watch a movie, and she always we don't watch a lot of movies together.
Okay.
But she tries to choose one that she thinks I'm going to like, so she picks this movie that has Jennifer Aniston in it because she knows I think Jennifer Aniston is hot.
Sure. So low-hanging fruit. Gotcha.
But it's a horrible movie.
Which one is it?
And we don't even get halfway through and we have to turn it off. So it's a bit of a it's a bit of a standing joke with Sean and I that we always try to watch a movie together, but for some reason, when we watch it together, it's a bad movie.
How does that happen?
Yeah, and tonight when I go home, I'm going to watch the Toronto Blue Jays game that I recorded.
Are they in spring training now?
No, they're rolling it out. They're having a good start to their season.
Nice.
Yeah.
We've incorporated sports onto the show, and there's another podcast in town. With these lovely gentlemen named Sully and Milan. Sorry, guys, your name's eluding me right now. I work 40 hours a week. And anyways, we did a hockey team debate where we drafted our own, like, all-star team.
Yeah.
We're going to carry this on with baseball now, so we're going to come up with our own ALS and National, and we're going to see who can, you know, pick the best characters who could play baseball. This one we're going to be limited because there's only, like, six or seven baseball move. Like, we're not gonna be all like Field of Dreams on each other. Like, you can only get so far.
Good luck finding a good hockey movie that does not fucking exist.
We went deep cut. Like, I brought out
Goon.
Yeah,
Slapshot's a classic.
Yes,
Slapshot.
That's I think that's undeniably one of the best hockey movies.
It is the je ne sais quoi of hockey movies. It's the quoted one.
It's Canadian. Purely Canadian.
And I think that's And I mean, for Paul Newman not being he's not Canadian, right? He's American.
He's American. Yeah.
He sure makes for a great like Canadian A hockey player.
Yeah.
I'm curious. What Jennifer Aniston movie was this?
Oh, I wish I can't even remember the name of it. She was...
She
was running a beauty pageant in Florida that she had won when she was a teenager. And she was playing a character probably close to her own age, or in her 40s. And she had a daughter who was not, you know, was kind of overweight, a larger girl.
Okay.
And sort of really didn't like what her mother represented in the pageant, and so she kind of like protested this thing, and then we turned it off.
Who was the mom? Who played the mom?
That was Jennifer Aniston.
Yeah, who played the daughter though?
I don't know. They played all Dolly Parton songs, so I think they spent all their budget on Jennifer Aniston and licensing for the Dolly Parton songs.
You would know of all the people. You know. You're like, I guess, like when you listen, like for backstory here, everybody, Dale is a mixer, producer. How many titles were on? I'm sorry, I couldn't keep track.
That's about it. Yeah,
mixer and producer.
Mixing
okay.
and producing. Yeah,
but he's big at doing both of them. So I'm going to go with this vamped up version of you for now.
Okay.
I really got to find out what this movie is. This is my point.
Hang on, I'll find out.
I'll pull Jamie here.
Text my wife.
Do you guys normally never finish a film? Is that something?
Well,
I often
fall asleep.
I suffer your pain too. Yeah, I'm in your
I
wife's.
Often fall asleep.
I'm in your wife's boots because I am the one who tries to... You'd think that having a movie podcast that I would be the one picking the movies in the house, right? Because I'm so on top of this industry that I'm... But no.
And you've got this film man cave, you'd think, yeah.
Right? Like, I don't have... So what I pick we have to try, and I hope it latches on. But when she picks, I'll watch anything, right? Like, I have no problems. I'll watch Little Miss Sunshine 1,000 times if that's what makes her happy, right?
Yeah.
So, but for normally watching movies, we don't see eye to eye. Shows we do, but movies we don't.
Right.
Do you normally fall asleep through almost everything? Like, is this...
No.
Are we beating a dead horse at this point?
Well, I don't know. I don't know. I don't sit down and watch a lot of movies, you know? I just don't watch a ton of movies.
Do you like shows more, like a miniseries kind of thing? Is that
yeah? I watched Ozark and Breaking Bad and a lot of that run of shows, and I just don't know if I fit it into my schedule more than anything.
I would imagine long hours.
Well, no, it's not really that. Just trying to. Yeah, I don't really have an answer for you, man.
That's okay, dude.
Yeah.
No, you're the first person. Now you are a golden child here because you're the first person who doesn't. So back to the YouTube video for a second before I let you go, because I can't wait to ask you how many glass doors out of 10 you give that. but was it a tutorial?
Yeah, it was how to take the, because our the oven doors are dirty between the oven doors on the inside.
So you got to take the door apart.
You got to take the door apart.
Fuck me.
And there's three pieces of glass in there, and no two ovens are the same.
No.
So
wiser words never spoken.
Yeah, yeah. It's I never got it done. I took the door off and couldn't find the right tutorial. So I'm going like, what am I gonna do? And finally, my wife just said, put the door back on.
So
we're gonna just sell it like that.
No.
If we ever sell the house, it's gonna come with a slightly stained
oven
window.
Did you ask for your time back?
No.
So just put it back is what you're asking me?
Yeah.
Do you remember the name of the person who made the tutorial that we could shit on? Because clearly their tutorial isn't doing their job.
No, I don't. The problem with the tutorial was it turned out it wasn't for the right door.
Those are the worst.
You know, I don't know how many Electrohome or whatever Electrolux, I think it was, whatever. They have a lot of different models of ovens that I didn't even know existed.
At least it's not the Samsung oven that has the screen in the oven door
right.
like $5,000 to replace, never mind the oven itself, right?
Well, this is one where the outside glass doesn't get hot.
Oh.
So it's got like two pieces of glass with a gasket in between it, and I think that's where the pie's built in. And then there's another piece of glass that's on the outside, and then, of course, the inside one.
Is what we're trying to solve.
And I'm not even...
You don't give
I'm not a handyman at all. Like, I don't even have a set of screwdrivers.
Dale Penner, rock and roll producer and home improvement guru.
Yeah. I know at some point in my life I'm going to have to start learning that shit.
Dude, I'm in the same boat. Like, when we got this place, we bought this place with me in mind that not a lot of things need to be done because it's either Shauna's father's coming in or we're paying for it and you don't want to pay for it. So, yeah, no, I totally, like, I changed my first plug end this winter. Like, I took a plug end off the front of my car and put another one on and was, like, losing my shit that I changed a 3-wire cord,
yep.
Right, and didn't arc it. But yeah, no, I totally get it. Like when shit like that happens, I resort to YouTube, but I can't sit because I'm like, I want to solve the problem. I don't want to flip through fucking chapters of some asinine guy who's just like preaching about fixing XYZ thing, right? Like, come on, get to don't bury the lead. Like, let's get to the thing we need to get to. So I'm always skipping through and then I'm like, fuck it. I don't need to read the instructions or learn. I'm just kidding.
Well, this dude had over 2 million views on his YouTube.
So. 2 million angry fucking people.
So he's like, he's making some good cake while he's like,
sure, yeah,
while he's doing it.
It's not even about the fucking solution. It's just about how long you can keep
you
watching.
Had a good list of sponsors. I mean, I bought into it.
Did he have sponsors? Seriously?
Oh yeah.
Did he like take a break from helping you and be like, and we're brought to you by?
No, but he'd show. You know, he'd talk about the products that he was.
Sure. Yeah, oven repair. Like the oven clean shit, probably.
Yeah, exactly. The spray stuff.
Oh, wow. So, yeah. I should be in marketing. No, I shouldn't. Okay, how many, because we can only beat this glass door so long. How many glass doors out of 10 do you give the YouTube tutorial?
Four.
Fucking
four.
Guy.
Because my door isn't fixed.
Yeah, so you can't even give him a five.
Yeah, five. If the door had been fixed badly, I could have given him a six.
And how was the Blue Jays game? Did they win?
Yeah. They did, yeah.
Have you always been a Blue Jays guy?
Yeah.
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 I was
yeah, I lived in Toronto. We used to go to Wednesday afternoon games once in a while, you know, sit in the stands.
My dad went and saw one of the World Series games, the Carter home run.
Oh, wow.
Year. He
was at
one of the games there. He wasn't at that game. He was just at a game, and all I got from that game was the Wayne Gretzky Sports Bar t-shirt. He brought me home a hockey t-shirt from a baseball game.
Well, you probably went to the sports bar because it's right across the street. From the-
it's exactly. And I was like, you went to the baseball game and brought me home a hockey t-shirt.
Right. Oh,
fucking idiot. Anyways, cool. All right. That's that. So watch the Blue Jays, everybody. Cam,
yeah, hey.
We talked about what you want to talk about. So let's talk about what.
Well, my story is very similar to Dale's.
Was there an oven door?
Actually, no, but Dune. And I couldn't get to the end.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, so, like, the biggest Oscar cleanup, right,
yep.
For technical, not for creative, but I think it pulled five awards. Yep. I watched everything, and then I had a really hard time watching it after. When you saw that whole thing go down live, it took me 20 minutes before I could really, like, Will Smith just hit Chris Rock. Like, I had
to snap back. Okay.
Well, no, we don't have to, but I remember from the Oscars that Dune was, like, going to be the talk of the night until that happened, but you couldn't get through it.
Yeah, I went to see it in the theater, but let's backstory this.
Sure.
I don't know if you've seen it, but I went with my boys because they knew the books.
Okay, they're
right?
Big fans.
Yeah, so they knew the books, and they couldn't wait to get in the theater and get in there and watch it. And then I was a big fan, you know, still am, right? Denis Villeneuve, right?
Cause yeah.
All these movies, Prisoners, Enemy, what?
Arrival.
Sicario, Blade Runner 2049.
Even Polytechnic, his first, right?
Yeah.
Like,
and he's from Montreal, so he's a Canadian guy. And
yeah.
It just looked like it was stupid how good it looked.
It was gorgeous.
It was unbelievable. And the process they did was unbelievable. I don't know. They did a reverse process from digital to film, and they colored on the film. I'm not sure how they got the look. But anyway, everything was huge and epic and everything else, and I just started not caring about the story.
At what point? Dale, have you seen any of this?
I haven't, no.
Are you going to fall? You'll fall asleep through it too?
I don't know. I'll give it a shot.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, it's...
It looks and it sounds. I mean, it's insane.
Right.
How it looks and how it sounds, but it just felt like to me this was, you know...
Long in the tooth?
Staying true to a book. I mean, I don't know. But
do you think that's out of fear because of how bad David Lynch's went down?
Well, yeah, but that was...
That was of the time.
Yeah, it was of the time, and it was very...
I think they just... somebody read the book and just watched Twin Peaks or some dumb shit, like, and was like, oh, yeah. Or maybe, was that after or before?
But David...
Did David Lynch do Twin Peaks before?
Sting, right?
That's right.
Twin Peaks is... That's quite a few years past, right?
Yeah, okay, all right, so yeah, then yeah. I'm talking out of school.
And David Lynch did Dune, like, way in the past, but with Sting.
Oh.
Right?
Yeah, okay. and Patrick Stewart.
See, I'd probably like that.
And
yeah, exactly, because it was far more art film he did.
Very much so. Like,
and Denis Villeneuve was trying to do something very serious. I mean, it's just, it is amazing. It's amazing how you pull that off and blah, 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 blah. But, yeah, I just started not caring.
Let me ask you, Cam, because you're, you know, you do this stuff. Do you think people are, you know, you think the movie, people are losing the story and the emotion in a movie to try and create something exceptional on the technical side of it or the cinematography side of it? Like that becomes more
predominant,
you know, because, you know, just as trying to get something new.
Yes. And I think, too, that they went in, I know they're really aiming. The entire thing was we're doing all three, right? So you could tell it was spacing itself out, and things went on.
The end game is two movies away.
Yeah, but you know, I mean, who's to say, right? Lord of the Rings is still. I mean, I could barely breathe. I remember going to the theater on Lord of the Rings, the first one, and I had my boys, and we were just stupefied. And but you're just so riveted and engaged, and all three were like that. And then you go see The Hobbit, and they shot it in that ultra-real, right, new version of the Red camera, and it was hyper-real. It looked like a big, glossy soap opera on a movie screen, and I was out in 10 seconds. So, I don't know. I don't know. But for me, it always comes back to script, story, somehow.
There are tons of lag points in Dune. I just rewatched it like 3 days ago. And like, yeah, you're right. They're making three movies. So they're like, we got to bang for our buck with this budget, right? Yeah. So that we can get it all in so we don't get dragged over the coals.
Yeah. But I mean, you look at it and you just have no freaking idea how they made it look like that.
That throat singing too, the sound in that throat singing scene where that guy, like they wake up the morning after they get on the planet and there is this low riveting, like alien sound that is true. It's coming out of the artist. Like that guy's European throat singer from like Iceland or wherever that's not in Europe. And you're just blown away that when you find that out after all of the gloss and all of the coloring and what you're saying about this reverse film from digital, like it's just,
I'm not sure how they did that.
You look at it, but that look only lasts for so long before you're like, give me some story.
Yeah. Something's got to,
right. The shine fades, lipstick on a pig kind of thing. And,
but that's just me. I mean, you know, but you know, the guys were like, you know, my guys left the theater. They weren't jumping up and down either.
And they're fans.
And they're fans. And then, you know, it came out on, you know, Crave. Now you can watch it for free. And they're like, yeah, no. So, you know, didn't want to rewatch it, see if it was wrong. Maybe the popcorn threw us off on the theater.
Well, when you know it won for best sound, you do go back and listen to it. Like, I didn't listen to it with that in mind. And then you're like, oh, well, a bunch of people in the sound department think this is award worthy. So then you go back in and you're like, wow, it is crisp and it does punch. And it rumbles in you. And it, like, when they,
no doubt,
when they move these big giant doors open, you're like, I think those doors are right fucking behind me.
Right,
it really hits.
And all the awards that won were all on the
technical side. Yeah.
Nobody won for screenplay. Nobody won for directing. So, you know, it's telling you something, right?
It is. And to the point of the next one is apparently where all the fucking nutsness happens, where this is watching a bunch of families and politicians. It's Game of Thrones in space, Dale, essentially, right? Like there's the Harkonnens and the Atreides and the Hookas and the Lounges. I don't know. I can't remember all the names, but there's like a bunch of fighting families and there's a planet that one family has to give up to the other family and they screw them in the process and it's all political and it becomes genocide. And then like they're trying to obliterate all the Atreides family. And this is nothing compared to what's coming. The next one I'm told is just straight genocide for 2.5 hours.
Well, it really is just a drug dealing movie. I mean,
it is. Spice is cocaine,
right? Spice is just mined out of the sand and it's who can control spice?
Oh,
so it's just
God.
A big drug lord.
Right.
It has hallucinogenic powers. Of course. So, all right. Well, yeah, I can see what you're saying. Like
just for me, it just, you know, and I'm a big fan of him. Like everything else he's done, it's been absolutely engaging, riveting.
I think with Blade Runner, like Blade Runner is him stretching and really showing you his talents, right?
Yeah.
I think this one, with the way the world was for the last 2 years, I think Warner Brothers may have been a little bit more involved than normal, because you're saying you like him and he's got this like this 1,000 batting average with you. And then the biggest one of his career where he's even said in interviews, he was like, I don't know how we got through this. I hear that as, man, it was tough, you know, and like maybe too many notes.
And even Blade Runner 2049, because I know Ridley Scott came out and said, yeah, the only problem was he made it too long. And Ridley Scott came out and said that. Ooh.
Kingdom of Heaven, Ridley Scott. Gladiator, Ridley Scott. Right?
Blade Runners, Ridley Scott.
So what's considered too long?
This is interesting.
When the story's done.
Because to me, I don't like long movies either.
What's your window?
Like a 90-minute movie is a nice, I think it's a nice length for a movie.
Yeah. I think I live my movies like the week. Like I love to crush an hour 40 on a school night, but then put away a 2.5 hour one, you know, over the course of an evening on a Saturday, right? Like slowly get into it. At the same time, I can put away, you know, I'm going to watch The Batman after you guys leave for the second time. And that's 2.5 hours long. And I won't go to bed until I'm done it because it'll pull me in again. But you're right, Dale, like a buck 40, 90 minutes. That's the sweet spot. We just did an episode about this where we were like SNL did a skit where they were like short ass movies, and it was like a rap skit.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
You saw that?
No.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. I love that. And it's all about what you can do in the time span of a short ass movie, and why short ass movies are great for parents and all that shit. And movies were originally 20 minutes long, like golden age of cinema, 20s, 30s, 20 minutes. And then from that to the 50s, it wavered in like 20 minutes to 40 minutes to an hour. And then the 80s and the 90s, late 70s, early 80s, right around where it started to get a buck 40 and it started to push. And then you have that peak in the 80s and 90s, right? Where, like, I don't know, greatest era of filmmaking, 90s. Like some, like, yeah, like everything else is innovation up to
that was
a point.
Just before the digital era really kicked in, right?
Right.
So they had, yeah, you had to make decisions as you were going along.
You did. You were.
It wasn't all about the editing then. I don't think, was it, or was it?
Well, no, but it was. You know, film definitely made you think more economically.
Yeah, let's get another fucking gigabyte drive and drop it on, right? Like, shoot, 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 till the battery dies,
or till somebody tells you to go home.
Yeah, you're over hours. That's a penalty. Yeah. all right, so for you, out of...
But it still comes back to story. I mean, you could talk about length of movie and length of anything, but people are binge-watching shows 8 episodes in a row. And
why?
The reason they're doing that is because the writing and how it was achieved and the performance, whatever, but they're hooked to the people.
Yeah.
You're not hooked to anything that's tech to watch 8 episodes of anything. You're hooked on wanting to know what happens to those people. And so, you know, people are engaged to binge. They can sure as hell be engaged to watch a 2.5-hour movie.
If done right, yeah.
You got to keep them anchored to who. It's like the Bond movie. I was so disappointed. And I was like, because at the beginning I thought, it's not even a Bond movie. I don't even know who it's about.
I still have yet to watch No Time to Die.
Okay, I won't take the ending from you.
I know what happens. I don't know how it happens, and I'm okay with that. I think it's the first time that's ever happened on screen with a Bond.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, spoiler alert, he dies. But that in and of itself is not a Bond movie. Bond's never supposed to actually die on screen. It's always alluded to it. Or we're just like, here's your new Bond, and we don't ask questions about the old Bond, right? Fuck Pierce. Here's Craig. But what happened to Pierce? Where did his story end? Doesn't matter. Here's Craig.
Yeah.
So.
Pierce died in an ice hotel.
Yeah.
Really bad Bond movie in an ice hotel.
Tomorrow, that's Tomorrow Never Dies? Or was it? Which one was it? Nothing Dies Today.
Die Another Day.
There it is. How many sandworms out of 10 do you give Dune?
Oh, I think I'd still give that 8.
Really?
Yeah, because, it's just incomprehensible how you'd even do a film like that. That's just achieving it. I'm just saying, for me,
Well, lost 5 me, awards, you got to...
Totally.
Can't discredit that.
Was it 5?
I thought you said 4.
I said 4. Oh, I said I'm 4 sorry. Or 5. My experience is 4 to 5.
Yeah, and it's just... Yeah, it's still an unbelievable achievement to get a film like that.
Well, he went right back morning after the Oscars. They flew him right back to set. It was like, you're working today.
Right.
No party for you on Sunday. Right. Which is like a testament to how in this he is. Like, I went to go get some awards, and now we're going to go back and make this to get some more awards. See you in 2 years.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah. I mean, and you need to get Paul and you need to get Chalamet and Zendaya when they're young. So the story, like,
yeah, they don't age on you.
There's continuity, right? They don't age too much, and then, you know, the prince...
like the Star Wars problem.
That, yeah, that was...
The only thing that didn't age was R2-D2.
Yeah, I don't think robots age yet. Fucking robots. Yeah. Well, with, like, Bruce Willis and his aphasia diagnosis, we talked about this recently, and I was like, I'm going to watch some Bruce Willis movies, but I'm not going to watch... Your cutout Bruce Willis movies that, like, oh, you watched the Bruce Willis movies? How's Die Hard last night? Like, that's the go-to. And it's like, it's not Christmas, motherfucker. Calm down. Like, save it for the holidays.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, there's more to the guy's catalog. So I watched Looper again.
Yeah.
Did you see Looper, Dale?
No, I have not seen Looper.
Do you like time travel?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you like time out of sequence and makes your brain actually... You probably wouldn't make you think too much. It's Rian Johnson. And whenever we talk about Rian Johnson in this room, Rian Johnson did one of these movies over here. He did...
He did, where is it?
The Last Jedi. And he made that a piece of shit.
Okay.
An absolute piece of shit. And I love Rian Johnson. Rian or Rian, whatever it is. I love him, and I loved The Brothers Bloom. I loved Brick. And these are, like, independent movies. Well, not independent, but, like, lower budget. Very kooky and weird. And, like, one of them's a film noir about a high school kid who uncovers a bad drug deal gone wrong where his ex-girlfriend dies. But it's all, like, here's looking at you, kid. Like, it's that old 50s speak.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Done in, like, a high school in 2016. Joseph Gordon-Levitt's in it. And, like, I think him and Rian are friends because he's in almost everything he's done.
Yeah.
But Looper is one of my favorite Bruce Willis movies, mostly because it's completely anti to the Bruce Willis cause, right? He's not being really... He's being an old man. He's being outdated. He's not being that leading man that you come to love a man. He's not fixing the fucking meteor flying into the earth. What are you shaking your three for?
I have three Bruce Willis movies.
What are, well,
that
go ahead.
I think, yeah, really, and they aren't the Die Hard movies. And I love action. But I liked him in Last Boy Scout.
Yes.
Because I love Tony Scott. Still do. Even though he's gone. The other one was... Sixth Sense, which still
is timeless.
Yeah, no one saw the ending coming.
No.
And Heart's War.
Really?
Yeah, I like Heart's War. No one does. But hey, I didn't like Dune, so what can we do?
No, but that's fine. I just never heard anybody bring up that Bruce Willis movie before, and yeah. Like, but those are his those are performances that are not cutout performances, right? They're
just like, not reincarnations of.
Yeah. It's not a studio going, we need to make some money. Get Bruce Willis doing Bruce Willis shit. But Looper's great because, like, it's you saw it.
I have seen it.
You have seen it?
Yeah.
For a listener, it's time travel. It's so you've got.
But it's time travel wrapped in a murder mystery.
Yeah.
It's really what he's doing.
And it's sci fi, but not heavy sci fi. Like, the time travel device that blasts people through dimensions is like a ball in the wall that's like, looks like some, you know, junior welder at community college put together. Like, it's not very high tech, and they have these hover bicycles that if you were Elon Musk, you've probably already designed one right now. Like, it's not that. It's 2044, I think, is the timeline.
It was probably the throwaways from George Lucas.
Yeah, right.
What did Peter you bikes. Design for Star Wars that did make it to camera? We got these fucking ugly things over here. Can we use them? Just, I'll pay you to get them the fuck out of here.
Ship them. I don't care where. Just yeah. Not back to Lucas Ranch.
And then they're...
They're in fucking Looper.
Yeah.
But so guy from now, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, is a hitman. And in the future, see if I can do this here. In the future, time travel is illegal. And mafias in the future use time travel to get rid of people in the past so that they don't exist in the future. But when you kill somebody, you also have to kill the person that kills that person. So how they've figured it out is your current self does your job until you retire. And then at your retire point, 30 years later, they come looking for you. And your younger self kills you as your older self so that your loop on Earth is closed. Right. Close your loop. And the story
Somebody did a lot of drugs to come up with that.
Yeah. It takes a minute to compress. And even again today, like, it's probably my sixth pass at it. Yeah. I was sitting there and I was like,
I might have to try and watch that.
It will really bend your mind. And it's a slow burn with a couple good action beats, nothing too crazy.
But it turns into a father-son story.
It does turn into a father-son story, right?
Because it's
really
the older version takes care of the younger version.
Like, it gets cheesy?
Not cheesy.
It doesn't get cheesy, but they start figuring
out. It's one of the 12 stories.
Yeah, well, they start trying to figure out how to save each other, right?
Yeah. Like, we can both exist, mm-hmm. and we'll eventually, like...
Because if you kill me, you kill you.
Yeah, and then everything I had that I'm telling you about, you won't have.
It's like Woody Allen wrote a script that no one did, and these guys went,
yep.
Wait a minute, we did this and this and this. This would be pretty cool for a time travel.
But it's really great to look at. Paul Dano's in it, the guy who's, you know, everybody's favorite weirdo from There Will Be Blood and Little Miss Sunshine. But still, it's going to hold up for, like, when you think of time travel movies, it's always going to be one of those, like, oh, what about Looper? Oh, what about Looper, right? And everyone will be like, yeah, Looper. Like, it's not Back to the Future.
Right.
It's not Bill and Ted. Like, it's not Marvel. It's It's a different way of looking at time.
So what's his thing? He can't work because he's having memory? Is that what's going on?
That's what eventually happens, because when two people exist in the same time, memories become... He says a line.
Oh, you're still talking Luke Cooper. I mean, the actual Bruce Willis.
Oh!
Like the diagnosis, oh. He stepped back because he couldn't remember anymore.
That's correct. His brain, from my understanding of aphasia, which I'm not a doctor, I just play one on a podcast. I read that aphasia is part of dementia, and you can't compute. Basically, you need to reset your computer multiple times to
really?
Finally get it. So his process of script to performance was suffering, and he had an earpiece, and they were feeding him lines because he just couldn't remember, right? And mm-hmm. I mean, I heard that, I was saying this before, I heard it come out, and I was like, huh, fuckers who all thought this was, you know, Bruce Willis phoning it in. It's like, no, he was sick, and he's working. Leave him the fuck alone.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's why he's stepped back. I mean, he's Bruce Willis, you know? Like, when you retire from football, you get to go and announce. So Bruce Willis will probably produce.
That's kind of iconic.
Right? Like, if someone was like, hey, can we get Bruce Willis to help produce this? Of course, you know you're going to have, he doesn't have to act to make it, but, you know, it's just not his joy.
It's not a nice way to end the career.
No.
No, it's not.
That's, you know, I mean, you're right. He'll have a career. He's got a career, no matter whether it's acting or, you know, he's got options, no question. But I don't know, you got that passion. You have to get to that level. That's going to be a hard fall.
Well, I can imagine with musicians and you watching it over time, like cramping of the hands or like just, you know, degenerative
voice,
yeah, all the things, yeah. That all the travesties that you hear, like, you know, Tom Petty, right, with his diagnosis and stuff and hiding it. Prince, right, not being able to play the piano or like play the guitar anymore because his hands are cramping up and he's taking pain meds to play. Like, that's got to be brutal to watch.
Well, getting old is not a fun time.
No, I heard.
And if, you know, so a lot of those people didn't live the you know, the cleanest of lives. I mean, the way they died, Prince and Tom Petty, that's really sad, actually.
Yeah, because it's you're hanging on to you. That's the one thing that's giving you relief, and to the rest of the world, they'll judge you for it. And it's like, no, judge him by his art, not by how he made it for you. Fuck off. Anyways, so let me just take a second here and get these cameras.
Oh, now we're doing cameras? Yeah, just at this point. This is the I totally didn't prepare for camera.
I took a shower.
Did you really?
Yeah. And I didn't put my toque on because I didn't want to fuck up my hair.
You will look fine.
Just vogue it. Now we have to talk about this short film. After we talked about all these wide global scoping concepts, this little film in Winnipeg that was just a 3 or 4 guys got together because they're so fucking bored.
Yeah, no, totally. That's exactly what this is. Because, like, I first of all, I love that you messaged me, man. Because
I'm shocked. Actually, it's getting the reception it is.
It's fucking. It's. Yeah. Like, I'm a fan. I'm just a fucking fan in a basement. But when you sent it to me, preface, ladies and gentlemen, this is the film that we talked about at the top of the show, with no smooth transition. We are about to hear all about how Antibody came to be, and it's like we'll get to it. But like it's a piece of something that could be so much more. And I really hope
there's a conversation,
yeah. That we'll get into that in a minute. But first off, so like the story's Antibody, the title's Antibody, I should say. You said you're bored, but let's dig a little deeper here. I don't think that something this cool comes just out of boredom. Were you thinking of something specifically? Was something happening around you in the world that made you come up with this idea, perhaps?
Yeah. Well, just out of the blue, the idea of this panic happened, this pandemic. No, it definitely came from there when, you know, cause you know, I was thinking about doing something and I really couldn't. You know, to be honest, doing a short film again, I hadn't done one in a lot of years. It just felt like it was just a lot of work. And This is going to sound really bad, but am I still this passionate about this? I don't know.
Sure. Everybody went through a fucking weird thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it takes, like, I almost quit this thing three times.
Yeah. And, you know, and then I, you know, got the book out, and then I started, I was working at home writing nonstop, and I thought, you know, maybe something's trying to end the pandemic.
Right.
Keeps you at home. Something's trying to tell you, get your ass on a laptop and get back to writing more. But I was missing it. You know, I was just missing just on a set, period. Just, and it wasn't even set. It was just working with actors and getting a performance and missing that high that you get from it. It's no different than when the lead singer gets that performance.
Right.
That thing that happens, it's just magic.
Lightning in a bottle. Both of you get to see it.
Yeah. And, you know, it's not.
And film and music are such good bedfellows.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Very much.
Right.
So anyway, yeah, they just asked. Darcy and I had worked together, you know, several times, and we're friends, right? And same with Ryan Herdman. You know, we worked together quite a bit over the last few years prior to the pandemic, and we're good friends. And it just came up that way. And I had the gear, bought all this gear over the pandemic, thinking, you know, I don't know what I was thinking, to be honest.
You were shopping.
I was shopping.
Yeah. We buy toys. This is our life. Yeah.
If I buy a camera, I can hide it by buying a patio set. And, but, you know, also too, my son's in the industry, and he's doing really well in art department stuff, but he really wanted to get into camera too. And I thought, okay, you know what? Then it's something I wanted to have, because it's always the thing you need to go rent. I can hate doing that.
Yeah.
And so anyway, we had all the gear for everything, so it didn't require anything about that other than just time.
Nice.
So yeah,
The
hardest thing to find. And it was definitely because the pandemic, but it was how I was feeling about what I was seeing. And someone made the comment to me that, you know, I don't want to say anything about what happens in a 7-minute short film here, but you know, it was a take on, you know, government overreach. I'm like, no. Really wasn't. It was that's not my philosophy at all, and I won't go there. Of course
didn't
not.
Even fucking see that.
No, good. Because for me, it was more, in the back of my mind, it was the statement of what becomes of a mob. You know, what would a mob do? And a mob becomes mindless.
See, I didn't even see that. I saw the family aspect. I saw the question of what do I do? Do I run? Is my, like, you know, the question between family and to own thyself, to thine own self be true. That's what I saw. I didn't.
Yeah. How to save my child in the last moment.
Yeah.
But yeah, for me, it was the whole world was coming in on him. And it's.
Yeah. Now I totally see it now.
It's people he knows. It's the outside world. And it all just becomes this mindless mob trying to survive.
Give listener like a just kind of a little preface of what happens here, like how we come into.
Antibody is the Home Shopping Network idea of, no, I don't know, God.
Listener, Antibody comes in on Darcy Fair, who couldn't be here, and it's he is getting information from his doctor about a blood test, I imagine, right? Like he's. Mm-hmm. He's submitted blood. We open with he's in the shower. Is he crying because he's worried that he might be the one? Or is he crying? So,
that's good. What did you think when you...
Well...
Dale's seen it more times than he wants to comment on because he's worked on it. He's crying, what was your... Because I know why I wrote it that way.
What I saw,
I know
at the,
why I shot it that way.
What I saw at the end was a guy having to make a decision in the beginning. When I realized what the end was, I saw a gentleman in the beginning during a pandemic-like virus that's killed 20 million people in 2 months.
Except him.
That's the rub, ladies and gentlemen. And you can ruin a short film because you know it's the point. But watch it anyway because it's not ruined. But I see a guy who doesn't want to take his blood because he might get an answer. He doesn't want. Now that I've seen the whole thing, where in the beginning I saw a guy who was afraid to test himself because he didn't want to find out he was sick.
Wow.
That's not what I thought at all.
No. But that's so cruel. Now I don't even want to say anything, Michael.
What?
Because that's your experience with it,
yeah,
right?
That's why it's more art than it is a... that's what I'm telling about short film, man.
You should have given
him
the edit, the long edit.
What? Okay, what is it, though? Like, what's happening?
Well, it's if you thought that, then that's what it is. I think that's the idea behind a short film.
I want to think more.
Yeah, but
think things into fucking
you know if it created,
fruition.
If it created that response for you watching it, then I think that's what it is.
That's
you know, for me to say is what I wrote it as to be and what I interpreted it to be. That's kind of my experience with it. So we can talk about that. I'm not going to talk about it. But I mean, so it's not, there's no really right or wrong. Because at the end of the day, you get to the end of the film and you still see what it was really
about.
Starry
Night makes everybody feel something different.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Isn't that the idea, though? You want your you want to direct and write a film that everybody relates to on their own level through their own experiences
totally.
A lot of times.
They
and
get to take something with them that nothing is.
Yeah, something happened
in
your life or something that's happening in your life.
Sure.
That you relate to.
That's a good film. That's the definition of a good film, is that everybody takes something
right.
different.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, because you anchor to that character for different reasons.
Okay, now tell me what your intent was.
The beginning in the shower.
Yeah.
It's the regret. He has to do it to save his daughter, but he couldn't do it in time to save his wife.
Interesting, because I missed the wife aspect until he said, I'm sorry, I couldn't save mom, honey.
Even though you see the line on the news.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I felt that she was just a byproduct, right? Like the kids were just left, mom had died, that's why he's in peril. And
it would seem so extreme if we hadn't lived through what we lived through in the last 2 years.
Oh, it would.
I've spent the last 2 years Zooming with Beth friends and literally with my granddaughters. You know, like Sue and I have basically Zoomed with our kids
and our
granddaughters. They are experts. My granddaughters are experts at walking around the house with the camera and pointing it and telling you what's going on today and all that. But, you know, that still serves as a disconnect.
Totally.
And
I feel different. There's a whole, like, I've interviewed you, but I feel different with you here than I did there because I'm catching your pacing. I'm feeling off of a thing.
Yeah, totally. 100%. So that's why, you know, the whole thing came up about just putting Darcy in a situation where he's got to call his daughter. It's over, right? It's over a FaceTime call. And it's...
Yeah, like that's so... Everybody knows that.
It's heart-wrenching because they can't do anything to save him. They can't help him. And we've all sort of, you know, not in this extreme kind of thing.
Man,
but we've all felt that. You know, people get sick or they're... And you can't do anything. I can't go to you. I can't help you. And... So
yeah,
he was isolated. So it's really where it came from. But, you know, Darcy called me, you know, it was like 9 o'clock on a Sunday and said, yeah. I had the kernel of the idea. You know, I thought I'd like to do something like that. But I was really thinking, because I was writing a thing for, you know, a Lifetime thriller, and I was trying to think of more thriller ideas. And I was really thinking more of a longer form story.
Yeah.
Because that's normally what I do. And, and then Ryan made the same comment, you know, we should just go shoot something. And I thought, well, what the hell? And I had a coffee and I wrote it in an hour and I sent it to them. They said, let's do it.
That's an hour, man?
Yeah.
That's fuck. Well,
10 pages of script. But I mean, it's not a 3-act play. Like a lot of people do short films, they try and crush a 3-act idea.
5-5-5.
Right?
Over in 15.
It's just a 1-act thing.
Yeah.
And not even that, really. So. You know, but it's
so much happening. You've got a phone call from a doctor. You've got government banging on the door. You've got
and
kids.
Everything, the whole attack. And
here's where Dale comes in.
So, yeah.
We knew by the time we got that far. And you know, and then Darcy read it. And we did make a few changes. I mean, it did go through a couple changes once we got into the groove of it.
As it should.
But, you know, when the second we were going to shoot and do that, I mean, by that point, we already knew, okay, we can make it look good and we can do this, but this whole thing is going to be so dependent on Sonic.
It's
just going to be so dependent. Well, you're not
going to
get
visceral,
people there
Dale.
By performance
like,
alone.
It hits. As soon as that film starts to get loud, it changed. Like, and the sound of everything that's in there, like all the ADR is like the water, the helicopters, the TV echoing, like getting that hollow sound of a TV in a huge window filled condo, like that emptiness, like it's all
well, yeah,
I think the dynamic range in that film is something like it's extreme.
Yeah,
it really is. You know,
so
it goes from 0 to 12 in
lickety split.
Yeah, in 7 minutes, and it never really. It's a crescendo right to the end.
Yeah,
it's really cool.
Because I always kept telling Dale, "Well, put more of this in front of Dale." Like, are you sure you want? At some point, it just starts turning down.
Yeah, maybe we should start turning a couple things down so the other things will seem louder.
There's other stuff here that we've turned too much on to.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm just trying to get people to sit on their chairs and...
It pulls you.
It creates a tension right from the start when they're banging, trying to get in, you know, when they're banging on the door.
Yeah.
That And it the race scene in the first sequence in Tenet, when they're racing into the Ukrainian opera,
okay.
You have the same intensity in this short. Like, you have it just launching off
for way less money
way less money, and just beautiful. It's beautifully shot. Like, is that the Glass House condo in Winnipeg? Is that,
yeah, what's it called, right across from the arena?
Yeah, I think it's called the Glass House.
Yeah, we just Airbnb it. We were in there for, I think we were in there for 6 hours,
maybe. Oh, that's lovely for production costs. Airbnb, yeah. The shit out of that thing and be gone.
Yeah,
Dale, you did music pretty much from the start, but your bio says that you've, over the times, you've had to kind of reinvent yourself, figure yourself out on your website, right? Because the shit changes, right?
You've seen, absolutely.
Like, you've seen cassette, you've seen CD, you've probably seen vinyl. I don't mean to be rude.
I've been in vinyl cutting sessions, man.
Like, so you've seen an entire industry change over time. And I can't imagine, I mean, we could talk to you. In fact, I kind of want to have you back and talk to you about music and film outside of this now that I know how heavy you've gotten into it because you've switched into it. But what was the draw to film for you? Like, going from music to doing film, it's kind of the same, but it's not the same. Like, I mean, technical, you know what you're doing, but now you're scoring to add something to it, where a song to get right and how it sounds is different than getting a moment right with the addition of music.
Right. I do. I don't write the songs for the score.
No, I didn't. Yeah, I
get involved in, you know, I do the mix, and I think what made me, it just seemed like a natural progression a bit, and looking for something different to do. And I had also, you know, I lived in Vancouver and Toronto for years, and now I'd moved to Winnipeg. My family grew up here. I had grandkids, and so.
You're from Blomkulli, right? Originally?
Yeah. So I had the concept of, you know, now you can live anywhere in this and be in this business.
Yeah.
Which I guess I do, but it was like there was a lot of cool stuff going on in Winnipeg in that format, you know, in film and TV, documentaries and all that kind of stuff. And I thought, like, shit, this would be like a really great thing to be able to latch onto, you know, be able to do something with people that are local. And
yeah.
So, and it was a challenge. So I'm always into a challenge. And in terms of reinventing yourself, yeah, it wasn't realistic for me to be probably doing that 20 years ago or 15 years ago. I was just, for one thing, I was just too busy doing way, you know, different things. And that's changed a bit. So looking to expand my business, really, is just expanding my business was the motive for getting into it.
Bigger toolbox.
And it's fun. It really is. It's a whole different set of creative circumstances. It comes with the same problems.
I would imagine, yeah.
So you know, you're dealing with some of the same situations, personalities, and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, and I had all the gear. So there's a lot about it that I had already experienced. And with, you know, actually, that's.
And then your best friend called you and went, please.
No, actually, I was
God,
just going to say that.
Me.
Yeah. How'd you get in?
I was just going to say that when I was kind of like thinking of how I'm going to try and get some inroads in, you know, doing this in Winnipeg, I met Cam Patterson. He was drumming on a session I was working on.
Yeah.
And he's telling me I do this. And I go, dude, I got to take you out for lunch sometime.
And I'm from Blomkulli. Well, my parents are from Morden. Wait a minute.
And he didn't know that I was just
going to get this shit going.
I was just going to try and get him to hook me up with some fucking gigs.
Yeah, right? Totally, yeah.
And now we're like best friends. So, yeah, I don't. Anyways, anybody. What got me psyched about that was just, you know, Cam was doing it. And I honestly, dude, I've just been a fan of his stuff. So
isn't it nice when you're a fan and a friend. Yeah. Like you're crushing on talent and at the same time like getting to play with your buddy.
Yeah, and I was thinking, well, if he's going to do it, why wouldn't I?
But it came from because we did do Desperate Rose.
Yeah, we had worked on Desperate Rose before.
That was an indie film in about 2014.
Okay.
That Jen Turner and Alan Turner had done, and it was part of a Abby Fettergreen program. Anyway, it came out better than I think we all thought it would. But it was a big learning lesson. But the thing that really happened to us was the sound was just not
the sound change. Like
we had to ADR and Foley that entire film from front to back.
Desperate Road or anybody?
Desperate Road. And that really? Was the learning lesson for me. And
well, because I hadn't been doing a ton of work at that point. I'd mixed a handful of clients. I had a client in Wisconsin, a kid that I did a bunch of work for. So I'd done stuff for him. But this was one of the first local things I was working on. So it was like, it was a bit of there was a big learning curve and ADR, and all the, I had to buy a bunch of new software to work it all out. So it was, I wouldn't say it was a problem child because it turned out really cool. But there was a lot of, unforeseen obstacles as you were plodding along.
Yeah.
What's the plot of Desperate Road?
It just car accident and the father is kind of, he survived the crash and he's just kind of coping with it. And you don't, I'm not going to give that one away, but the whole thing is about him sort of not remembering and kind of being lost in the fact that he doesn't really know what really happened. He just knows there was an accident but it kind of builds because it starts adding up to, where his family really is and what ends up happening at the end.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah. It was a pretty clever idea. It was an ambitious project for the budget they had and stuff. But the thing was is that I think the film really was shot well too. We had Steve Morrison shooting it. It really did look good.
It looked amazing
for what we had.
Anybody?
Desperate Road.
Okay, all right.
And then
Steve Morrison, William F. White.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Steve was a really good friend of mine too. We water skied our kids, and he said, "I'll come and shoot that for 12 days."
Yeah.
But when it came to the sound, though, I think we just it just wouldn't have survived. And the redoing of sound like that, and I'd never gone in and worked with actors to do ADR and what
for
process
listener,
that is.
I know ADR, but just for the listener, like what is the ADR process?
Well, basically, you're bringing actors back in and replacing all their dialogue. But sometimes you just fix some lines. And, we were really lucky. The cast that we had, everybody came in and they said, I think they were just keen to do it because I'm not sure, maybe they had done some of it before. But I think, honestly, for them, it was like, yeah, I'd love to try and do this. And they were all game. It was unbelievable. We had a phenomenal cast on that film. And like Lyle Morris and Crystal Snow and Pam Avita. And they all just came in. And they spent quite a bit of time going through all their lines. And we came up with a process that worked best for them. And then we got all that done. Then we had to Foley it. And then we had to score. And then we had special effects. And then we
90% of your
got
film
Dale
is
to turn this into something. And taking EDR is one thing. Syncing to your lines is something another. But then Dale had the software that could tweak that in, and it was locked, and it was unbelievable.
70 some odd passes to lock in like 15 seconds of audio to replace a clip I was really passionate about a couple weeks ago.
Yeah,
and like I know it's still off, but it's manageable enough.
You had the original clip and you had the new clip.
I had a Zoom clip that had better audio than the recorded clip, but I had the video clip. So I had three lines of audio because I detached the audio from the clip and then took it and cut it out of a better line and brought it back into the video that I had and tried to line it up. And I was like, I don't want to ever do this for a living. Like this just...
You're trying to do that in your phone or on the computer?
On my Mac.
Right. Well, there's a program called Vocaline that kind of works well with
really?
It.
You know a little bit about it?
Well, it'll sample your original line. That's what they use for, that's what he's talking about with ADR. They use it in all the...
Do you see both lines of audio
well, you just,
and you know
the,
when
the,
it...
The program will capture the original dialogue from the onset, and then it'll capture the ADR, the dialogue replacement line. And they have to be somewhat close, but it'll just analyze both waveforms and make the
necessary
ADR match the the original
and then,
onset audio.
Boom.
Yeah, I might email you about that.
Dead on sync.
That's crazy. Okay.
A 15-second file, I could, if you got both of them, I could fix them for you in like 5 minutes.
That's nuts.
Yeah.
And that's also how much, like, with the sound that you did on this, like, where, how are you, like, what are you punching up? What are you taking out? Or are you just looking for the best versions of what's going on? Like, how do you play sound? We've never had a sound person on before. So how do you play sound into a film, and what's the process to get it in there?
Well, my job on this, on that particular film, was to kind of help get all of the audio onset and dialogue and otherwise into a good, clean state. So that it was mostly a technical job. My job on Antibody was something that was that plus more. Like,
make it huge.
Antibody. It was like, get the dialogue tracks from, well, just all the tracks basically.
Yeah.
Clean up the dialogue tracks so that, you know, run a couple of filters through it so you don't, so it doesn't sound quite as echoey when you don't want it to sound echoey. And, you know, for the guy that running the sound that forgot to turn the air conditioning off for that, those couple of lines, you know, that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
We threw him off the balcony on the
yeah.
there.
And,
fucking idiot.
And then once you get that done, then the fun starts. Then you just start mixing it, you know, and adding sound effects, and you got your soundtrack, and kind of like play with the volume of the soundtrack against the dialogue. You can put a, you know, for some scenes, you can put a noise gate on the music track and trigger it from the dialogue, so you get these really sharp cuts where the music will come noticeably up and down.
This is what I'm talking about.
You know,
like, incorporating the sound into the that's nuts.
And the and just adding stuff like, you know, I've got a shitload of sound effects, and you just some stuff you don't even notice that you don't even know it's there unless you turn it off, like a drone that's, you know, like something like that. Just like a fucking drone. You just like mix it in there and it gets slowly louder and then it turns off. You know, all those subtle, it's like ear candy in a song. It's like a it's like a shaker.
I can't imagine what you're like with an ASMR track. Like does that stuff is that mixer kink? ASMR? Is that like where you're like, you know, that lovely sound of like, like, I watched Kevin Smith roll a joint as Silent Bob, and it was ASMR, so it was all the sounds. It was the paper, the weed, the grinder, right? And you just, like, just close your... Like, my brother-in-law falls asleep to a guy shaving with an old-school razor because it's just fucking soothing. So this ear candy that you're talking about, I totally fucking get it.
You can put stuff in. I can't remember. Sometimes I'll put something funny in that nobody will hear, but I can talk about it.
Like, you know, like what?
Like a silent, like not a very loud fart or something.
Just after the gunshot.
Yeah.
Like very, not at the time when no one would notice.
Nobody's going to notice.
Is he Brad Pitt in Fight Club? Is he sticking dicks in the screen just randomly? You just hear farts in the background. That's amazing.
No.
But that's like a, I know.
It's like, you know,
it's a signature.
Well,
I was here.
This is you got to have fun while you're working.
And oh, yeah,
so,
that's a good
you
idea.
And a job like, you know, a lot of those jobs, as Cam knows, they're long ass days, right? And
yeah,
just
sometimes.
Sit in one place focusing. So, like, I recorded an album once in L.A., and this is off track just for 1 second.
Please go. L.A.'s fine to go off track.
The guy in the studio is like, because he says, what's with you Canadians and your farts? And he says, we had a band in here last month from Canada, I Mother Earth or something. And
nice.
They recorded all their farts. And then at the end of the day, they'd play them back, and they'd have to guess whose fart it was, and you could win dinner or something.
That's fun.
I mean, it was like when you're in a room and you're just with the same five people 70 hours a week, you gotta ramp up the entertainment, I bet.
I completely agree, man. We're fast and loose here at the Real Debater, so I think we'll just incorporate a fart at the end of every episode now in honor of Dan.
But those were fake farts, so the ones that I put in the movie, I don't actually, like, record a fart.
That's what everyone's going to be listening to.
Yeah, that's what they heard. Yeah. Does he record them? He's now confirmed, guys. He doesn't record his farts. I should stand corrected. Alan Wong did sound. So we have talked to a person of sound, but that's not somebody who is strategically doing this now. Like you've come from music, and there's some things here that are kind of like big points in careers for you. Specifically, I want to tie it into the movie one first. So like he sends me the message that he's like, can I call you? And I was like, yeah, we'll talk. So I call him back and he's like, yeah, a couple of the guys want to come. And I'm like, fuck yes. Like bring people.
Exactly.
This is me having fun while I'm working.
Right.
Yeah.
So, right. And it's not even work because it's just fucking talking in my basement. Like, you know, I'm in here in my boxers when no one else is here, guys. It's not fucking work. So, but he told me what you had done and everything. And I was like, oh my God, Top Gun. You mentioned Top Gun, like Tony Scott, obviously.
Yeah.
This is what's funny about Top Gun is I was in music production for like 1 or 2 years when like the first vocal software was coming out. I don't even remember some of the names, but it was when Pro Tools was first developing.
Yeah.
Like Auto-Tune, I think is what we had or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
Anyways, I was always in jazz band, concert band, musical theater. Like I played trumpet for 9 years and regret putting it down, going somewhere with this. But for one of my music production classes, they reeled in the TV, right, with the VCR. And you're like, yes, no fucking work today. And my teacher, like, deadpan, he's like, we're going to learn all about sound today. And he turned the lights off, and he put on Top Gun, and he walked out of the room.
No way.
And he, at the end of the movie, he was like, how'd that sound?
Yeah.
And we were like, really good. And he was like, that's what good sound sounds like. And that was all, like, he just used Top Gun and a two-hour class to be like, yep, right. that's perfect sound. And it really, like, the jet engine roar. But you got on the soundtrack. That's where I'm going with this.
Right.
So how do you find yourself being part of the team that's mixing Loverboy for Top Gun? How does this all come about?
Right place at the right time, I guess. I lived in Vancouver at the time, and I was working at a studio called Mushroom Studios.
Yes, okay, I read
like
that, yeah.
One of the head engineers, one of the, you know, staff engineers there. And there was tons of stuff that came through there, like, you know, Jerry Doucette, Hart.
Who just died today.
Yeah, he did.
Oh.
Yeah. And so there was lots, and so I get this call saying, you know, Loverboy, they were pretty happening at the time. And I was just kind of like a fairly low guy in the totem pole at the studio. And they wanted to come in and cut a demo on a Sunday night, and nobody else wanted to come in. So I'm going like, fuck yeah, I'll do that.
Sure.
So we go, I go in, and we cut this demo of this song that's apparently going to be sent to Columbia for this.
Yeah. I know this. Like, it's fucking cold.
Yeah, so the movie's going to, you know, apparently this kid, Tom Cruise, is going to be a star, and they have big plans for the movie, and yeah, so we recorded the song. I came back a couple of days later and did a couple more sessions on the song, and 6 weeks later it was on the radio.
kind of
bizarre. And the movie was, I mean, the song was a hit because the movie was a hit, but it was a killer song. I mean, I still watch the Loverboy video for the song because it's such, you know, I mean, I'm a,
yeah. It's well, and that's when they used song. To cut video mm-hmm. in, like, the band and then the movie.
Yeah.
Right? You do that.
Yeah.
And that's how you promoted the film. I think that, fuck.
What did you have to send to them? Like, after you recorded it and it was done, then what did...
What
did the film production require for you to send for...
Well, I sent the multi-track masters. I did all the recording. Okay. Sent the multi-track masters. A guy named Keith Olson in L.A. was doing the...
Like Keith Olson from Sound City? Keith Olson?
Yeah. He mixed it. I sent the tracks to him. And
he's a big part of the Sound City story.
Yeah,
he's a big time mixing guy.
I'm really impressed. I pulled that from the recesses of my mind. Go on. I'm sorry.
I don't know what they would have delivered, to be honest with you.
Gave them the masters.
I gave them the. We did it on 48 tracks, because Paul Dean wanted 24 tracks to try all his guitar ideas on, which was a lot of fun. I worked with Paul. Was like the guy who'd spend like a full night, like all night, working on different guitar stuff, and we'd have a blast, really.
Oh my God. Like,
and I think they chopped half the shit out when it got to mixing, but Paul and I had fun. I remember when I worked on his solo album, same thing, although that wasn't wasn't really the same sort of commercial stuff that Loverboy is, but yeah, that was just the right place at the right time, man.
Yeah, like Top Gun is Top Gun is Top Gun. Top Gun is shirtless volleyball and jeans. Top Gun, like, it's in the ether. And and I think that's fucking, that's one of the coolest things anybody's ever said to me in a room.
I have a really funny story. I know you hate this shit.
Oh, perfect.
I have a really funny story. We went out for a Scotch night not too long ago. And with an actor, Lyle Morris, and Al Turner, and Dale, and myself. And then we took an Uber home, right? We had the wherewithal to Uber. And we got into an Uber, and Lyle didn't live too far from Dale, and I don't live too far. So anyway, we Ubered it. And just the conversation that, because Lyle was asking Dale after a few scotches, so, you know, who have you done? What do you do? Because he doesn't really talk about that stuff a lot. Anyway, so he gets out of the car, and Lyle asked me, he said, so did he do, like, Top Gun? I just went, yeah, he did that. And the Uber guy started singing, in your eyes. And he started freaking out. That guy, he was here. He was in my car. And he sang the entire song. I couldn't remember.
That's what I'm talking about. Like, that moment, like, you... We were talking earlier about what I saw the opening scene of Antibody to be, right? And you're like, that's yours. Take it and go with it, right? Mm-hmm. This guy takes In Your Eyes and goes with it. Like, that scene, I bet you he kissed a girl to that scene. I bet you he tried to kiss a girl to that scene somewhere in his life and pressed play on the tape deck before it went down or some shit, right?
Like, well, that's the beauty of what we do. Whether it's a film, a song, a book. Once you give it out to people, it's their experience with it. It's no longer your experience with it. And
that's so weird, because I know what we do here is what it is. At the end of the day, it's a conversation, right? So it's you it is what it is. You can't take any nuance out of this shit. But like I would imagine you having your hands on you know, you're on the master tracks. Like it's how you put it together, right? And someone else interpreting a lick or a chorus or you know, any part of the song that's now not yours anymore. Like, you don't really have a say in a thing after it's really out there that can be interpreted multiple ways.
No, you got to get your you got to mold it with before you send it off, because nobody's going to listen to you after that. You got to like put your stamp on it before you deliver it. But you know, one thing you just said about how, you know, when you create a song or create a movie, those kind of things, you don't really, it's not like creating widgets where you don't go to a job and know exactly what you're gonna get at the end of the day.
Yeah,
and I think totally. I think that's the same as what you're doing here, man. You have a point. I mean, we didn't have any idea what this was, how this was gonna go. So
we didn't know the microphones were gonna be this nice.
I didn't even know that I was gonna have to wear headphones. but so you're really got something cool going on here with
dude, thank you
with that too. No, I, you know, it's like you're creating something here.
We're
creating a conversation that people hopefully
and you're
will
informing.
Enjoy.
Hopefully young film music people are listening and they learn.
I just hope people who love movies listen to us, because we think we talk like people who love movies, which is out of turn. We might be wrong. We've misquoted. We're human. That's what we are. This is how we talk, right?
But it's your experience with it.
Exactly.
It always comes back to what your experience is.
So like I hope to the people who listen, we always, you know, take a minute. We love you. We sincerely, I mean, I know every time you fucking hear the ads on the show, you're like, there's that cheesy prick trying to sell shirts again and skateboards. But like, no, like I get what you're saying, Dale. Like, something always comes out of this never the way it went in. And when you're mm-hmm. making a song, like, you, it's on paper, notes are there, or a script, lines are there. But it's something about how it jumps.
That's a cool thing about the job, man, if you want to call it that. Also, your clients, if you have a bad client, you're only going to deal with them for you, it's only like 2 hours.
It is.
For me, it's maybe like 6 weeks. So it's like, fuck, you suck. You're a shithole. But I can deal with this for like 5 more weeks. Not like if you got a boss that you hate, that you're trying to make a career at a workplace where you're sort of just stuck with it. I mean, there's so many great things about doing this creative stuff.
Yeah, I've found that this is like my outlet, right? Where I'm like, okay, put it all on paper, and then I come up with something, and then like the words in the room that magically happen over the course of a conversation, right?
Yeah.
You know, and then we edit as little as possible.
Go
ahead.
Yeah, getting back to Antibody.
Yeah.
I'll bring us back.
I wanted to go back to specifically what you said with the mob mentality, like where that.
Oh, okay, because I was just going to touch on a couple more things.
Sure, go. You go first.
Because the sound and what we did.
Yeah.
And I just want to comment, because Liam Barry came in, and I didn't really know him. And he did a score. And I remember when I gave him the film, I said, you got to find spots to put some music. And he took a listen. I think he said, holy crap, like there's a lot going on. So I thought he did a really great, subtle job on how to emphasize that. So that was really, we were really fortunate with that. We also got Brendan, I remember who you are, don't worry, who came in and, you know, edited the film. He also, in his spare time, which I didn't really know, he really loves doing motion graphics. So he did all that stuff. He did all the new
helicopters, the new stuff. Yeah, just shot the plates. Super tight, man. Super tight, Brendan.
Yeah. We just shot the plates, and he took it on. And and then who else?
When you say plates, you mean the green screen plates?
Yeah, there was no green screen. We only did the newscasters and green screen. The rest, we just shot plates, and we knew that he would put something over it.
Oh, okay. I get what you're saying.
You're right?
Yeah.
And then and the reflection stuff and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Ryan, the whole reason I really did it was because I got to spend a day with my son Cody. He wanted to come in camera for Ryan. He didn't want to hang out with me. He wanted to hang out with Ryan. Maggie Collins came in, and she helped us AD. Vaughn Poyser came and helped us for a day. He doesn't really do that. He's a music guy. He's a bass player.
It sounds like a ragtag group of creatives who just...
And then we found these two actors. Darcy knew Jenna and Gino. And
the guys who played the kids?
The kids on the FaceTime. And they were doing the FaceTime call from Vancouver. So we had to time the call. And they did it from her apartment or his apartment, I can't remember, in Vancouver. And then they
did
the scene that way. Yeah.
I thought you would have just done the video and then fed it through, like put an overlay and then fed.
We did that live in camera.
That's cool. That's what people were doing during the pandemic, right? Like you're making do with what you have.
Yeah, we'd even talked about that. We talked about that in the audio too. It was like,
we did. Yeah.
It was like, wow. And then it was like, you made the right call on that though. Just like keeping the rawness of that computer call.
Yeah, there was there was leaning. Should we really slick this up and do, and without every time we tried to talk about or made a change, just no.
Well, and the question the audience then says or asks is, well, how do I get my screen doesn't look like that? Like, if you really, you know, banged it up and made it look as good as the film is,
yeah,
then you're the mind's eye goes, well, no real good Zoom videos.
And that's
you know what I mean? Like, the graininess goes, we're rooted in reality.
Yeah. And there's two guys on there. There's Ryan Herdman knowing how to shoot that film, like knowing how to get that look. But then there was also what we did before. And Tony Whitting's a really good friend of mine, and he's probably the best colorist in town. So, you know,
very
I had all
clean and, yeah, and blue.
Yeah,
and
but we kind of knew what, you know, the LUT was going in. And then Tony took it and he softened out that look and made it look that way. And so it's like there's a lot of people here that just, I'm really lucky. I have a lot of really talented friends that said,
you're all welcome.
Yeah, it's
on
great.
The
we'll
show
do your little
film,
but don't
this.
Ever fucking call us again.
But like it, you'd mentioned this earlier and I'd said it too. And it's a piece of something that I want more of. Like, I really want.
Okay, so what's that story going to be? Because that's the first thing my agent, my manager came back with. So is this a proof of concept? Do you have a script for this?
Yes, right?
Really? That's awesome. that's awesome, first of all.
Well, what happens after he's, after the end of.
Is this your opening sequence or is this a chunk of the story?
No, I would say it's not. I would say the story is after.
It could be a trailer.
Yeah, it could be a trailer. But
I mean, it's really
for me. The future
I think
would
you really
be
left
after
a lot
this.
Of options open.
Well, the obvious choice is if the screen breaks from the kids and we don't see the kids die, maybe somehow he gets out. Like, we're only led to believe that he's waiting for everybody, for the mob to get there. But, yeah, we do know that.
You don't know what happens.
What happens? I'm thinking to how we got to the mob and answering the question of how the mob mentality came to be in the last 2 years. Because,
that you could do in a feature. That you could totally do.
Like, I see this
but I don't
as,
want to go back in that apartment and redo that.
No. No.
No interest.
But that's the end of how we got there. Yeah. How mom died. We'll get some of that. We'll get to why they're not together as a family at the moment. We'll get that. We'll get how the disease came to be. And you can do a lot of filling and showing. You could show how a family was ruined by COVID.
Or we could show what happens to him when the mob takes him away.
Yeah.
I like that one, too. I like that one, too.
How far will it go? How far would humanity go?
That could be like the end of it.
That's cataclysmic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Save, if it was one guy, one person, then it's every blood strand that follows out in the world would get checked. And those people would be the, you know, hemoglobin to survival.
The question changes totally when, what does the mob do when the mob gets what the mob wants?
Well, they eat it.
Yeah.
They destroy it. That's what a mob
does. Dawn of the Dead. Yeah. Zombies. Yeah. No, it's got so many questions that are allegory, right? Like you're asking questions about society. You're asking questions about family. You're asking questions about self-sacrifice.
And all we really wanted to do was just like make people great for 7 minutes.
And it's, well, that too. Like you get cheese grater over my knees. Like there's just so much tension there. But I mean, make a fucking $140 out of this, and he won't fall asleep, and everybody will watch it. And, you know,
No, I definitely think there's something there to that.
I totally think there is. Yeah. It really is just leaves you. It really still it leaves you hanging though. Yeah. So,
and that's the thing. The mob is the bad guy, because the mob is never really the bad guy, like in the Purge movies, right?
Yeah, exactly. Fear is the bad guy. Yeah.
And
now we're really getting metaphorical.
Well, and isn't that what a good film does? Like it makes you ask questions about the world you live in, and
we saw it happen, and you know, I won't get into commentary here, but you know,
you can dip in your toe in the water.
People's reactions sometimes
are too emotional.
Surprise me.
Yes.
Shock me.
Sure.
Which is fair. But you know, it's funny. And then some tyrant in Russia starts killing children with missiles, and suddenly it's a reality check as to what you really think is loss of everything.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's.
And how that dovetailed from like
your
liberties and freedoms. Or if my freedom to go to a rock concert is a freedom, fuck. That's a lovely place to be if that's a guaranteed freedom.
Yeah,
no, that's a privilege.
It's a privilege, yeah.
Right? Anyways, yeah, I get your point.
Yeah.
It's
just, you know, it's not a big statement on it, but it's definitely, I think the short film is not hindered by the fact that everybody who's watching it in these festivals where it's winning awards has lived through this sort of feeling on some level.
Oh, very much so. This is the theatrical version of it.
Yeah,
right,
well,
like
it's an extreme.
Your whatever happens. No, it's an extreme. It's an extreme in a dystopian universe that doesn't exist. Sure, but that's what the fucking screen's for. It's for places that don't exist.
Yeah.
But yeah, like it. I'm a huge fan of when something isn't what it is on the nose. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like I was a fan of. And this is a poor example, but what I'm saying is I was a fan of how I went to see the Batman, and I got a film noir detective movie with a guy in a cape.
Yeah.
Right? Like I got a different story with the same tools, right? So you're giving me global infection. You're giving me virus. You're giving me humanity's at stake. You're giving me something we've all experienced in the last 2 years. So there's, you know, you're giving me all the things, but then you're also giving me, I'm questioning what kind of person I am.
And it leaves you hanging.
Yeah.
It totally leaves you hanging.
And it should.
It's just a father's decision to do the right thing. That's
simple.
All it is at the end. That's all our films are. Yeah. All my stuff comes down to that level. Everything. The Need to Know book.
That's true.
All of it comes down to, right?
Yeah.
The goal to tell the birth mother you did the right thing. That's all it is. Everything else was just.
Well, and that's great conflict, too, right?
Yeah.
Because everybody's always trying to do the fucking right thing.
Yeah.
That's the tough thing about it. Did you, was there any, like, did you let him have the reins with this? You were just like, make this loud, and he came with what he had, or were you kind of...
Yeah,
like,
we showed up with a bunch of ideas on what to do stuff.
Yeah, and I ran with it and got it to where I thought it was a great starting point, and then Cam came over and we finished it together, really getting his. We did a couple of different. We did a few revisions.
We did
getting it. You know,
how many passes of like loud, incessant mob people at the door did you guys go through? Like, did you find it the first time, or
when you turned something up, you found you've lost something else?
Yeah, that's what I'm getting at. Like, when are you getting to that?
It was just how to blend outdoor people to indoor people and blend score. But then when it all breaks loose and the gunshots.
Yeah, at the end, it's just chaos. There's red lights everywhere. And it was.
But
just,
it's all your
it
imagination,
just,
right? Because you're stuck with one guy in the apartment. Yeah. So it had to.
The audio was, it was interesting, though, because it was all live. All of the dialogue was live, even though there wasn't a ton of it. So it sounded, the whole thing had a bit of that live sort of like feeling where you're there. Like you're in the room.
Your perspective, your camera work was
camera work plus the fact that the audio was live, so you get the sound of the room as opposed to ADR.
There
was an element in the components, you know, an element in the tracks that I got that had that immediacy to it. I mean, I didn't even pick it up right away, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
Until we started thinking maybe it was wrong, and then we realized, no, it's not. It's just part of the whole thing. And then when you just kept building around it, the noise in the background just added to it, really.
Those are the things that just blow my mind, that you're listening for the room noise, like the ambient noise in the room, that all of the things in the room are like the clock noise and the battery and the hum and like all of those things.
Well, it was a very echoey environment. That it was an apartment with cement walls, so it had a lot of natural
cement and glass,
you know, reverberation,
which must drive you nuts.
but it fits the, when you look at it, I mean, I think it would sound funny if you had just a very dry person
cleaned,
talking in a room,
clean sound
in a room that looked like
that,
right?
Yeah.
So that was kind of the point I was trying to make. It all kind of like the sound right from the get go had that component, and you just everything we did just added to it. Really,
it was just a matter of when to layer it in.
Yeah.
What you and Darcy go way back, I imagine. Like
way
working
back, I did short films with Darcy a long time ago.
Well, my
Truce.
My Winnipeg is where I. Hear of him, right? And like I was watching him in this and seamless. Like he's really I like body acting.
He's brave.
He's very brave on camera.
He's very brave. He likes
like he's an actor's actor. It seems more than he's
more. He was brave with this, you know. I mean, even reading the script and only 9 pages, you could read this and go, well, this could just get out of hand, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think he did a pretty great job. And I mean, we shot that day out pretty fast, all the other stuff, so we could save as much time as possible for them to have that
moment,
the talking scene, and they could spend as much time as they want.
And I love a good...
Really give them a good 20 takes, you know, like a really good run at it and really, really get into it and figure it out.
The choice of no sound or just...
Oh yeah.
World sound until he finally speaks. Very very There Will Be Blood, right? Like long waiting. Why is no one speaking? Is this going to be a silent? Is this just gonna be you know, and then all of a sudden they start talking and you're waiting on that. You're hanging on that first word, and I love the holding off of speech and just using environment.
Well, the texting.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
That was very clever way to sort of,
and it builds
talk
too
without speaking.
Yes, exactly. And but like, get out now, right? They're coming for you. Like it just the bubbles of anxiety, right? Like we all know what a fast text feels like. So using, like, when you're trying to fight on text, now you're trying to save your life on text. Like that's a lot of fucking texting, man.
Yeah.
No, there's so many. This, you pack a lot in to like 7.5-8 minutes. Like it's. There's a lot there, and yeah, I love knowing now about the mob mentality, because I don't like the mob. I don't like mob.
No, no one does.
No,
unless you're in it, I guess.
Yeah, but even then, I don't want to be in the mob that comes for somebody. I'm tolerant. I'll just not listen. It's pretty much it. I do have one more question for you though, and maybe there is, maybe there isn't. I love with our real life versus real life cheese ball line at the beginning of the show. I always like when someone does a thing and that thing isn't put on screen. How many times on screen are they missing a thing, or they don't do that thing, or they do that thing? So there's a lot of scenes with guys on screen in recording studios. Like, does that ever perk you up a little bit and you start watching closely? And be like, what the hell is that switch he's putting up? Or do you let something like that slide? Because you've been doing this for...
You mean
35?
If I'm watching a movie where it's...
Yeah, have you ever seen yourself on screen in your job? And then been like, I have a lawyer friend who's like, it's not like Suits. And I'm like, it has to be, you know, like
oh,
that
I
kind
see.
Of thing.
I, yeah.
That's
no,
my point.
It's probably not like the movies.
No.
No. I mean,
it's more like that video
yeah.
that was out where that guy's noodling on the board trying to fix this singer who sounds glorious. And then the camera goes in the studio and she sounds horrible. And he's got no fingers left at the end.
It's kind of like when you go into the recording studio with the band. It's kind of like when you go to the ER at the hospital, where you kind of just you check everything at the door, right?
Okay.
You might, you know, your flap might come open. Who knows? You know, your something might fall out. You might get the wrong drugs. So you really it's a creative free for all, really, an organized creative free for all.
Yeah, organized chaos.
Yeah.
No, you see.
I mean, I put up a sign in the studio. Said better sorry than safe. That was one of my mottos.
I like that
for making albums.
Yeah. Well, it's easier to ask for forgiveness than it is for permission.
Yeah. Better sorry than safe. So, but I think there are some movies that, you know, probably capture what happens in the studio. But for the most part, it's probably not as crazy as people think it is.
Yeah, that's the thing,
I mean,
right?
It is really
suckers like me see, you know, something. The Motley Crue biopic, right? Where like shit's just going off the chain, the shitty Motley Crue biopic.
Yeah, but that's more about Sunset Boulevard.
Yeah, but you know what I mean? Like the version, like I'm sure it has happened, but like I would imagine that it costs money and studio time's expensive. So like let's not burn the fucking cash. Like
no,
let's get to work and create, right?
Well, half and half.
Okay.
We had stripper Fridays a lot of times.
Nice.
Like some people would have blue, you know, they'd wear their
casual Fridays.
Pants. We had stripper Fridays. At Little Mountain Sound, which is, you know, where actually Motley Crue recorded.
Those, oh, really?
Those guys were even. They took the stripper Fridays one level further. They would have, they would get the studio runner to go to the 7-Eleven and buy a bunch of porn magazines, get them back to the studio, and they would call the 1-800 numbers at the back. Not to talk to the girls, but to arrange for them to come up to Vancouver the next day for a little party.
That's the easiest one. That's smart. Yeah. For a bunch of fucking partiers, that's smart.
So there was, but I was the producer, so I was always on on call, right? If you're the drummer, I mean, your job's finished after the first week. Right? So just hang around and get into trouble, right?
Shots fired.
You know, if you're the singer, you're always getting into trouble. It's everybody's kind of got their thing, but the ones that's there has to be a work ethic.
Yeah,
it has to be fun. Like we had, but a lot of studios have multiple facilities, so there'll be like three studios in one.
Studio A, Studio B, Studio C, kind
and
of
so,
thing.
So, you know, some of the shit that I remember, a friend of mine, Garth Richardson, who's a pretty well known producer, he was working in Studio B, and we were in one of the other studios, and he had a kidney stone, so we hooked a microphone up in all the bathrooms in the studio. And every time Garth went to the bathroom, we hit record. I mean, we were committed to recording him passing his kidney stone.
That's amazing.
And we got it. We got it. We recorded it.
No.
So,
was there like a clink?
No.
No.
Just a lot of screaming.
My God, man. Oh, my.
Which you heard in the Wes Craven movie.
So just
I was
going to
say ADR
shit.
For another fucking horror film is what that was.
Universal's looking for tons of this kind of sound.
Oh, my God. That's...
But it's like fun and work, basically.
Yeah. A healthy balance of
Yeah, I mean, you
both.
Get when you're doing, you know, you're getting paid well, so you got to deliver. But it's a part of the process where the business people aren't really involved. Like, you kind of get to be creative without too many of the people that are paying for it.
Yeah, where his,
unlike a set.
Set daily notes and, you know, critiques and, Yeah, you would have a little bit
more.
We
just get all the bad news at the end.
I don't know how. Yeah. Daily or one lump sum? Daily or I? Yeah, I don't know. Gents, I would love to chew your ear off. I would love it if you came back sometime, Dan.
I'd come back anytime.
Yeah?
Totally.
All right, sweet. Two of you. Yeah.
You got my email, right?
Yeah, I'll get it from him. Yeah. I got you, but like both of you. Like, let's do this again. Yeah. Like, let's next time you're doing something, just I'll call both of you and get you back here. Is there anything else that we need to get out to the people about antibody and let them know that after this weekend?
I don't know what's going to happen.
Okay.
It's got a festival run. There's about 40 festivals.
Okay.
And I think there's only about 10 or 12 that have sort of come back. And like, and now we just found out too the other day it's got more awards for best thriller and stuff. But it's got a long way to go. I think we're just going to let that play out and then worry about seeing if we could distribute it somewhere, I guess.
Well, once it's done, it's pass. And you, if you want, send it to me and we can put it out there in whatever fashion you see fit.
Oh, yeah. Outstanding.
So that people can see it. And I will, I will fucking scream your name in the rooftops. I loved it, man. Honestly. Like,
fantastic.
I really, good. And like, everybody knows I'm a shill, but I really fucking love short film. Like I will always love a Marvel movie is my point to that. I will always love a stupid blockbuster film, right? Like I don't, but like,
yeah.
I really, and having Ian back, like having Ian on the show and having interviewed Ian, right? We'll get him here next time.
Yeah.
You know, and like Strong Son was what did it actually.
Yeah.
When he did his film and then I interviewed him, it awoke something in me. I had an awakening.
Yeah.
And like I'm
and
like,
he's doing a feature version of that.
Yeah, he is with Farpoint, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm really glad that you shared it with me and thanks for talking about it with me because
this is awesome. Of course it's just all about the hang in this room.
Yeah. Yeah, no, this we're
in fact,
slowly,
we have to talk is just the sidebar.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a little bit of everything for everybody in this room. So Dale, thank you,
Michael, for having me, man.
Yeah. Dude, my pleasure. Cool. I would love to. We'll just take a whole bonus episode out, and we'll just talk about music between the three of us sometime. And everybody will have to put up with it or skip it, because it's the best thing about a podcast. It's like there's 100 and somewhat more before, and there'll be one next week. So if you don't like it this week, that's fine, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
So we'll talk after the show. But that's it, ladies and gentlemen, and people of all kinds, shapes, and sizes. Thank you for tuning in to another episode. If the show is still happening May 14th, because I don't know when this is going to come out, come to a show, live recording May 14th at the Handsome Daughter. $10 tickets. We are going to argue what movie or series should have its own themed restaurant. Think Fuddruckers, but with Top Gun. That kind of thing. So if that's still happening, get at us. If it's already happened, I apologize. This is just the life of a podcaster on the side of a full-time day job. And if this is your first time and you wanna learn more about the Debaterverse and everything that we do here, there's an end credit trailer that explains all of the stuff that I should have never explained at the beginning of the show for 2 years. And if you want to listen to it, it lets you know how to interact with us, how to talk to us, how to review us, how to support us, shop us, donate to us. All that stuff is there, and there's a link in the bio. That's all I'm going to say. So listen to it, though. I have been Michael Petro. My guests have been
Cam Patterson
and
Dale Penner.
And we are gone. Watch all the fucking movies, kids. Say bye. Bye, guys.
Bye.
See you later.
And just like that, ladies and gentlemen, another Real Debaters production is in the can. Thank you so much for listening. If this is your first, second, third, fifth, 20th time, thank you so much. But thank you to the first timers, the ones here who pressed play for the first time and took a gamble on us. If you like what you heard today, the easiest thing to support the show is just to subscribe. Hit the like button, the follow button, whatever's in your podcast player. make it so that we're always there every Wednesday for you, okay? That would be huge. If you want to stay in touch with us, if you want to follow us, there's a couple ways to do that. We're on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, Facebook. We're slowly migrating to YouTube by putting all of the things we've ever put on video onto that site. There's some surprises coming this year that happened a while ago, but I felt needed to be shared because they're part of the Debaterverse. So the YouTube page is coming. But if you want to follow us, it's at Real Debaters Pod on Twitter and Instagram. It's the Real Debaters Podcast on TikTok. All of the links, all of the one-click-away things are in the show notes that you've just listened to. So if you want to follow us there, that would be great, too, because then you get to stay in the know of all the things that we do and what we're going to try to do this year and what we've done in the past, so on and so forth. Yeah, so that's how you stay in touch with us. If you want to contact us, it's thereeldebaters@gmail.com. All the spelling for all these things is R-E-E-L to keep with the title of the show. So you can send an email to us there, request an episode, want to call out one of us for being a goofball. There's places to do that as well, too. Like the Real Debaters website, you can email us, or you can go straight to the website, rate us in Podchaser, therealdebaters.ca. And if you really, really liked what you heard and you want to support the show in some fashion that requires you spending money, well, we got a couple ways for you to do that as well, too. You can buy our merch at the Prop Shop. It's a store through Threadless, and it's online, and you can order stuff. We've got tons of stuff. We've got our Mass Debater wear there. It's our signature, original, and only line. It's all of our – it's our logo on everything. So you can support us that way. Go to the merch tab in the show notes. Or if you just got a buck and you're like, hey, I want to give you a buck – and donate it to your cause. There is a tab in the show notes as well, too, that says donate to the Debaterverse, I think. And if you click on that, it takes you to our donation page where you can donate like $1, $3, and $5. And you'll get something for your $1, $3, or $5. Any more than that's just ludicrous. Luda. So, yeah, that's just kind of what I wanted to tell you, that what I said at the end of the show. This is what you should listen to because this is all about who we are. And now that we've gotten to where we are, we want to interact with you guys more. So these are the ways to do so. This is the way to stay in touch with us. Thank you to everybody, again, who's listened to the show. Again, you pressed play. You took a chance. That's cool. So without further ado, this is where I said I would talk more. So it's eggs on your face. No, I got nothing else for you. So thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week. And watch all them fucking movies. Bye-bye.